live from the G&D Show Studio. This is your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Welcome back, listeners around the world, to your mystifying home of... Wait, what'd I say? Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Hello, hello, everybody.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Schoonover, can you hear me, sir?
Hey, I took myself out of the system there for a second and forgot to put myself back.
Yeah, well, that's only the professionals.
I was trying to say that it's their mystifying home as well. It's their mystifying home away from home.
Absolutely. Well, we've been out of the mix for a while, guys. If you couldn't tell by our tonight's intro, we just got back from the G&D Show Manhattan Tour. 2013.
Yes,
Private
showings for multi-billionaires willing to shell out huge sums of cash to pay somebody else for us to be there because we didn't make a dime.
Yeah, maybe they're willing to help us get a new intro because we flopped that one tonight. I wonder if they'll let us do it over again.
Let's pretend like it just started. Go ahead, John.
Welcome back, everybody. To the
Mystifying. We're back. Yay.
Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. That's right.
You're home away from home when you're not at home, or you are at home, or you want to escape your home. That's us. We're there. We're with you. We're trying to do the same thing. You think guys get together every weekend to watch football or to do radio broadcasts? No, they get together to escape their real lives and have a home away from home. And that makes you our family.
Wow.
That's right, folks. You're the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter family.
Mm-hmm. Are you done? Are you finished? That was like a 25-cent therapy session right there.
There you go. We're here for you.
Anyway, guys, this is your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, the lovable screw-ups of radio. And if you didn't know that by our intro, tonight's band, Up for Days, guys. What a great band.
Up for Days. That's how I feel right now, Sean.
Yeah, like, tonight's band. Up for Days. I do. I feel like I've been, it's just kind of shell-shocked getting back here in the studio. But Up for Days, guys. Up for Days. That was a great song. You'll be hearing a little bit more about them during the break. But check them out at ReverbNation.com. That's Up for Days, ReverbNation.com.
I feel dazed. I'm dazed.
Yeah, dazed and confused. You just got home. You got the stuff going on there in studio. We just got everything green light. We got a hot show tonight, Demon Hunter.
We do. We have a hot show, and we got stuff to talk about. Sometimes we come on, we're like, oh, what did you do this week? Nothing.
Yeah, what are we going to talk about? Yeah.
Well, we've been doing a lot this last week.
Dude, it's been amazing. The week before.
Yeah.
The weekend before. It was.
To get started with today, Sean, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
If I may, because today is such a special day.
Go ahead, since it's so special. Oh, absolutely. Big one.
It is a special day. Today is the one-year anniversary of Chrissy P. and my getting married.
Oh, right, yeah.
We took off last year, this same week, so I could go off and get married. Oh, no, we weren't doing a show last year this time.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like we've been doing a show forever, and I just forget when we're doing them.
Your anniversary. This is for you.
But I took off last year at this time, so I could go off and do a show for my day job. So I could go off and get married, not do a show. Sorry.
Yeah.
To Chrissy P. For those of you who are longtime Ghost Man and Demon Hunter fans, you'll remember Chrissy P. used to do our literary fiction reviews, our horror fiction reviews on the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show called Dead Letters.
Yeah.
And I married her.
That was good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, one year ago today, Chrissy P. and I headed up to Howl Cavern. Howl Cavern in Howl Cave, New York, and we tied the knot. And for our 1 year anniversary, she and I went back to Howl Cavern because we love it so much. If you've never been up there, it is a underground cave discovered by Lester Howe in 1842.
Oh!
You know, a little bit of legend going on here, Sean, because, okay. You know, one of those things where people all know the cave, it's up there, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
People who live in the area, that's one of the things that bring in tourists and get some money there in the summer. But in 1842, Lester Howe noticed his cows were leaving his field and going and sitting in his neighbor's field.
Oh.
And when he went to explore why his cows kept leaving his field, he realized it was cold air coming from behind the hill. And, you know, the Indians' tales of the area had said that there was a breathing rock in the hills. And as he went through the bushes and cut down trees and dug away, he realized there was a cave mouth in the side of the hill.
Okay.
And he bought the hill, I believe, off of his neighbor for $100.
Right.
Which was a hefty sum back in 1842.
Right.
And then proceeded to give the first cave tours in the area.
Ooh.
So, you know, the cave has been around. In 1927, they decided to, anybody who knows how limestone works, people want it for concrete, they started using the area to dig out limestone to make concrete. Another group found a new entrance, dug a new entrance in 1927
okay.
to the caves. And in 1929, reopened Howell's Caverns. And since 1929, it's been running for the public. I've been on the tour. I got married at the caverns. My guests went on the tour. And this weekend, I went on what they call the adventure tour, where I had to get dressed up in all the spelunking gear and go down and crawl through caves that are not normally open to the public.
Well, not so you had to crawl through. We were talking about that, you know.
Yep, I got covered in mud from head to toe, squeezing through tiny little spaces. And I believe the opening of the cave is called Fat Man's Lament or something like that. I kid you not. And I got through the cave and went through. And you got to crawl on your hands and knees, sometimes on your belly, to get through the area. And just got covered in mud, but the sights that I saw, and there was actually a space in the bottom of the cave where you can go called the Grand Rotunda, where they turn off all the lights and you experience absolute darkness.
Okay.
This is, your eyes will never adjust. I don't care how good your night vision is, there is no light, so there is no way for your eyes to adjust. And if you sit in silence, you experience absolute silence.
Okay.
Not a sound. Not the hum from our radio, Sean. Well, I was there with Chrissy P, so every 5 seconds she just went, wow. you know, it was a great experience. I do want to send out a thank you to Howell Cavern, Anne-Marie and Bill, the proprietors of the location, who gave us a great tour. Our tour guide, Laura, and the whole staff, Holly, Brenda, April, Elaine, Dave, all you guys. What an incredible job you do. What a great weekend I had. Just fabulous. We ate at the Americana Hotel, the American Hotel, which was an abandoned, I guess, hospital or something, which was rebuilt into a beautiful restaurant and hotel. Doug and Garth run it. The head waitress, Heidi, waited on us.
Garfunkel?
Sean, was just like you plucked me out of everyday life and dropped me into heaven. It was fabulous.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
And, since before we get into Sean, I know what Sean
is. Is there anybody else you would like to shamelessly plug? Or what about Habib at the gas station?
I'm shamelessly plugging the people who treated me so fabulously this weekend, Sean, because they deserve it.
Anybody
who hasn't been to Howell Cavern, pack up and go now. You need to go on vacation to Howell Cavern. But I also want to just wish my cousin-in-law, Marianne Squilia, a happy birthday this weekend. Yesterday was a birthday. Happy birthday. And because you deserve it, too. So, Sean, now, the Ghost Band and Demon Hunter show can get back on track, and we can talk about our adventures last week as I sip away at this week's Beer of the Week, which I'm quoting off before you do this week, because I picked up myself a case of Spaten Oktoberfest. Spaten from Munich. When you need a beer, it hits the Spaten.
Oh my God! Would you spend? You didn't tell me you had written a small Bible. I wrote a small Bible before.
Actually,
you came on here.
The funny thing is that I had coffee 5 seconds before we started the show, so that was actually all off the cuff.
Jesus. Should have had a Valium before you get. Are you sure you didn't want to? You sure you didn't miss the gas station that you stopped at on the way?
I did want to thank the people at Hess for.
Yeah, I was going to say how many. I'd like to thank the good people at Exxon for providing the gas that I used to drive to caverns.
John, if you had been up there this weekend, you would be doing nothing but talking about it too. It was the most fabulous weekend.
Can imagine, man.
That I can possibly describe. Once I get those pictures up on Facebook, folks, of Christy and I down in the caves and just the location in general, go back and look at our wedding photos. They all took place there.
Oh, man.
It's incredible. It's fabulous. And I love Howell Cavern. Even more than I loved it before I went this weekend, I love it even more now. So
don't be playing with
I'm just excited, Sean. Am I not allowed to get excited? You're so used to me sounding so melatonin and monotone. Monotone.
You're making this episode extremely easy for me. Thank you.
When I get excited now, you worry that I'm doing something.
So you're fully erect for the show tonight, huh?
I am. Ecstatic for the show tonight.
So. That's great, man. So when you were there this weekend, did you go down in the caves, was there any kind of, stuff going on that you may have heard?
You mean
No, I didn't know if somebody might be in the cave. I always wanted to have a romantic excursion in
a cave.
In a cave, the dark caverns.
If you're going to have a romantic excursion in a cave, make sure it's in a clean part of the cave. Because the part of the cave I was in, you had to wear hazmat suits.
Really? So there wasn't no...
But the normal tour is very clean, very designed for people to just be able to go through. But I was actually in a part of the cave, like I said, that's not normally explored by folks. So, No, there was nothing going on down there except
some exploring.
Some newts that had gotten down there. And...
Yeah. Well, that's nice. So you was in the rolling hills of Connecticut.
No, this is up in Upper New York State.
Upper New York State. Okay. Well, we spent some time there the weekend before last. And
we were definitely in New York State the weekend before last.
Absolutely. It wore me out, man. I came back. I didn't even go back to work until Thursday. I came down with something. I don't know if I caught it on one of the planes coming back or what, but I was done. I was down for the count, man.
For those of you who don't know, Mr. Burris and I don't get to spend as much time together as we used to in the early years of the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. So we plan little excursions whenever we can so we can experience the unknown together and refreshen the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
Yes.
And this was one of those weekends.
It was. It was fun, and we went out there. We experienced some stuff. We crept around the Hollow. Sleepy Hollow, New York, guys. That's where we went. That was now to me, when I got home from Sleepy Hollow, it was surreal, man. It was surreal. I was so excited. And, it was one of my bucket lists, guys. Here, we're going to show you some pictures. Demon Hunter, here they are. We're bringing them up right now.
Well, I can't see them. Okay.
Yeah, you might be able to keep. But, guys, these are some pictures from our trips. You're going to see them a little bit on your screen. I think there's something delay or whatever when we're broadcasting. But you're going to see them. The one in the middle, of course, is the famous statue in the middle of Sleepy Hollow Village of Ichabod Crane being chased by the Headless Hessian. Or you would know him as the Horseman, the Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow. And then you got pictures of me and Nathan standing by everything. And the old Dutch church, you kind of see it out there. I even threw up a picture for our little friend that I forgot out there. I forgot his name. The security guard that we ran into at the little village there.
Yeah, it's funny how wherever Sean and I go, we run into a security guard.
Yeah, we do, don't we? but we always get lucky like that. We rolled into Sleepy Hollow. I think I arrived in LaGuardia, New York, about 1?
1. I picked you up around 1:30, I think. I was able to finally find where you were at LaGuardia by 1:30.
Absolutely. That's a big airport, man. And then we headed to the Hollow. The legend of Sleepy Hollow, the actual village, guys, that Washington Irving used for inspiration of his tale of the Headless Horseman. And like I said, it was surreal for me. It was one of my bucket list places, and it was still amazing. I think I'm going to bronze the sandals I wore when I walked around there. It was... I thought there would be more, though, Demon Hunter. I thought they would...
Well, you know what? The problem is, Sean, You flew in at you got landed a little after 1. I picked you up around 1:30. Mm-hmm. Took us about an hour to get out of New York, another 45 minutes to get up there. Right. We rolled into Sleepy Hollow at about 4:15, only to discover that the entire town entire town closes.
Yeah.
At 4:30 in the evening.
4:30, man.
We Sean's dream. I want to go to the cemetery where the headless Hessian is said to rise from the grave. Okay, we pulled in just enough time to be told we had to get out.
That was great. That was terrific. We did get to go though.
We did get to go in. We found a legal way to go into the cemetery, folks. Don't ever go in illegally.
Yeah, don't ever do it. But you know, if something closes at 4:30 and the sun's still up, it was hard to grasp.
It was heartbreaking. Yeah. It really was.
But we did get in there and we had a good time. Yeah, we doggy. Jake Clampett.
And then we found one of the manors that the security guard was on, because the manor is also closed at 4:30.
Yeah, but like I said before, like I was going to say, we've always been lucky with the people we run into at these places, because we've been to several of them, and we're usually always late for everything. And there's usually a security guard or a passerby that stops and helps us out. So thanks.
But we're generally night people, Sean. Yeah. You and I, we show up at places and we roll in and we think everybody else is a night person like us, and then we're standing around going, where is everybody?
Now, what was the name of the, they had a little restaurant there, guys. And getting back, let me describe the village of Sleepy Hollow. Some of you guys might not even know that it existed.
Why don't you tell the story of Sleepy Hollow very quickly, Sean, for those who don't know?
Okay. Thanks for my cue on that. I appreciate it. The story, guys, of course, of Sleepy Hollow was about a school teacher coming to Sleepy Hollow, which is a small village, like I mentioned before. And he was chased by a headless ghost, which was called the Headless Horseman. And it was believed that the Headless Horseman was a Hessian soldier that back in the Revolutionary War days did battle with the Patriots and lost his head to a cannon fire. And nightly he would arise from the old Dutch burying ground behind the Dutch church, which you guys can see me and Nathan standing in the old Dutch burial ground behind the old Dutch church. And the headless horseman would rise and chase him across the bridge or chase him all over the village. So that was a very... it was a very neat place to go to, man. The old church is still standing. It's beautiful inside and out. You got the cemetery with the old stones and the artwork. Some of them, what was it, Demon Hunter? Some of them was dated back to, what, 1700s?
Oh, early 1700s. Well, of course. I mean, we're talking Revolutionary War.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But the stones, is what I'm trying to say, were still there.
Which, you know, people from the Midwest may not realize. Here in the East, it's sometimes difficult to keep stones around that long because the salt from the ocean blows in and eats away at the stones.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good. Thanks for that lesson in stone and
well, you know,
weather.
When I'm talking to a stoner, it works to
I couldn't find the clip. But that that little village we went to, guys, they have a little thing set up there where you could go. Of course, that was close to, and they had a gift shop, and you go across the bridge and you can see some old homes from that era. But we talked to the security guard. We were out there, and he told us some ghostly stories. There's actually three stories of three different apparitions in that area. What was it? Large Marge and some other stuff? I forget what it was.
Oh, yeah. There was of course, a typical white lady story.
Yeah, yeah.
And because wherever we go, there's a white lady.
There's
story.
A white lady, yeah. I didn't get to reload that picture up. We we've caught a white lady on film.
We let her go.
A white lady ghost. Yeah. We let her go, though. Turned out that she wasn't a ghost. It was just a nun. It was a nun, man. We went to... Now, Nathan, last weekend, or the weekend before last, I went to Danbury, Connecticut, of course, where the Demon Hunter Studios are. And he took me on a tour, and he took me to an old cemetery that we love. And it's Union Cemetery, of course. It was made famous by the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine, the demonologist from the old days, where they said that there was a lady in white that would roam these grounds. So we went out, and there's actually two cemeteries, right, Nathan?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And we
there
went to
is
one...
Union Cemetery, which is famous for the white lady of Connecticut, mm-hmm. and the Stepney Cemetery, which is famous for where the white lady travels to, supposedly to find her long-lost lover. It's also the cemetery where the famed Ed Warren is buried.
Well, there you go. Absolutely. And we went out there, and we seen, since we pulled in, we were talking about the white lady, and here comes a white-gowned lady with the, and they, her gowns were flowing. I mean, I swear, I took the picture for
myself.
There
was a bit of mist behind her.
Yeah, and... yeah, and it happened to be, like, I think spaghetti sauce on my cell phone little thing there. But it came out perfect, man. She looked ghostly, but it was a nun. It was definitely a nun, guys. So if you've seen it on Facebook, it was
but
not a ghost.
Of course, Sean and I are walking around in the cemetery, and there's teenage girls wandering around looking for the white lady, and Sean pulls out the phone and says, well, we caught her on film, and shows her them the photo, and the girls were all just standing there going, oh my God, did you get that today?
Oh yeah, they
oh
loved it.
Oh my God.
Didn't they love it? They were like, oh,
hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah. Yeah, they were like, oh my God, shut the door. They were so scared. They were looking for her. You gotta admit, that was pretty cool photo op.
Oh yeah, yes, definitely.
But anyway, guys, Sleepy Hollow, New York, if you're gonna try it, check it out. Go out there. It's beautiful. The rolling hills. Like I was saying, though, before Demon Hunter, I thought that they would pay more attention to the legend. I mean, because they changed the name of the town back to Sleepy Hollow, what, in the 90s? Late 90s? Early? No, I think it was like 2003.
Was it that late? It's right on one of the photos of you and I sitting there on the...
Yeah. Yeah, we're sitting there by the statue. But I think they changed the name back to Sleepy Hollow in the 2000-something, maybe late 1900s. But I thought they would have more attraction to it. You know, maybe like a whole side of the town, totally recreate it like it was back in the day, you know? Something like that. But it's all modernized, guys, to a certain degree. And
there was a section of Sleepy Hollow that was like the mill and things like that, which sadly we couldn't get into because it closed at 4:30.
Right. And it was beautiful out there, a little lake in front of it. It was really cool. But just walking into that town, guys, like I said, check it out, Sleepy Hollow. It puts you back in that time. And you can almost picture, you know, Irving sitting out there walking through this old cemetery maybe to take notes or get the feeling for this story. Because you definitely get a, we were out there at sundown. You definitely get a creepy feeling, don't you, Demon Hunter?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like Sean says, it up until is it 96 that you were thinking of there? It was North Tarrytown.
Yes,
maybe. But the entire town was just so beloved for this story. You would think, I mean, they're even coming out with a new TV series about it.
Right, right. And even though they're not
filmed, Sleepy Hollow, from what I understand.
Yeah, and even though they're probably not receiving any proceeds, the tourist alone, you would think they would, you know, get off
but
on
that.
But
we did go to the Horseman Diner.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, big special thanks to the very healthy young lady who waited on us. not big boned or anything, but she was... She had a lot of upper body in the shoulder region, most specifically the chest. Am I wrong?
Comments of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
Yes, am I wrong? But she was a sweetheart.
Hoo-ah.
Yeah.
You know what? The funny thing is, Sean, that was when we realized she was telling us how her family had moved there from New York, and that her parents originally coming from the Puerto Rico area, and they were telling us how they moved to the Bronx, and then they moved to Sleepy Hollow.
In the Bronx, yeah.
And she didn't want to move there, and she had never actually been in the cemetery.
Yeah.
And she stood there and said, you know what, you're right, I live here, why am I not taking more advantage of the history around me? But that was the beginning of the evening where we realized that in order to find a Dutchman in Sleepy Hollow, Sean had to bring his own.
Yeah, the Schooneman over. Yeah, I had to bring you to Sleepy Hollow. That was kind of a... see, that's the thing about these American legends. They're going to the wayside, and we got to bring that back. Because like the legend of Sleepy Hollow, guys, a lot of the kids these days, the only thing they know about it is the... Well, they probably don't even know about the Johnny Depp movie. That came out when we were in high school. So...
They need to come out with a game for it on Nintendo for kids to understand Sleepy Hollow these
days. Right, right. They need to learn their American legend because this country was built on these kind of things. And you know, somebody should shed some light on that kind of stuff for the younger generation, because there's just some great stories and great places. I mean, the smell, the feel of the Sleepy Hollow was just amazing. I hated to leave. It's right off the rolling Hudson River, and and the town came alive at night. They had little bars and.
Yeah, you know, that definitely. But it wasn't about the legend. You know, there were very few people besides ourselves there because of the legend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
but
it was.
Apparently, it does become quite the lively town come Halloween.
Oh, I bet it does. You know, it does. I wonder in comparison to Salem, what it's like there around Halloween.
I don't think it would be any comparison to Salem, Sean. I mean, Salem closes down the highways.
Yeah, yeah, it's like Mardi Gras in Salem, which I would love to go there some year. That would be my next bucket list, Demon Hunter, and it definitely will happen before 4:30 p.m. on a day, and it'll definitely be more than one day. But yeah, it was something. I know I put on Facebook the next day we woke up in Tarrytown, and I said, looking down the road at Sleepy Hollow and watching the sunrise, man. That was a, well, the sun was up, but I threw in sunrise for the...
Well, you know, it's funny too, Sean, because we love this story. But I'm sure you've watched the Harry Potter movies and read the books.
Yeah.
And they have the Headless Horseman ride through Hogwarts, because the story of the Headless Horseman is around long before Washington Irving wrote it.
Oh, really?
The original Headless Horseman story was a Celtic folktale.
Okay.
Originally traced back as far to like Irish folktales of a headless fairy. Usually riding a black horse and carrying a head under his one arm.
Yeah.
There was a Scottish tale of headless horsemen who would chase men down to get their heads. There were German folk tales, and remember, this was a Dutch town, and German and Dutch groups tend to, you know, the German language, not too high German, not that different from Dutch. It would, the tales would spread.
Right.
So they have actually, if you read the Brothers Grimm, I think there's two German folk tales regarding Headless Horseman. Right. And of course, you know, and that leads to the fact that Washington Irving was hearing all these stories. And as our friend, was it Steve, the security guard or something like that?
Steve, the security guard?
That when Irving actually wrote the story, The Headless Horseman, he had traveled to England, wrote the story, and then wrote it about America.
Yeah, he sure did.
Because Washington Irving was actually born in 1783, which was a few years after the Hessians had actually rolled through that area. Mm-hmm. So he was, his whole life was raised on these stories as a child.
Yes.
So he intermingled them.
Yeah, but it was with history that he brought this story. Of course, the Van Tassel family. These are real people, guys.
And oh, yeah.
They're buried there in the Sleepy Hollow Cemetery. And it's really cool anyway, guys, too. I don't want to harp on it, but I can't say enough about Sleepy Hollow Cemetery.
Will you be coming back to Sleepy Hollow, Sean?
I think I will. I don't know when, but I think I will go back there. It's like a day tour, guys. You could take the day. Sleepy Hollow, the Headless Horseman. Or was it? No, the Horseman. It's a pizza parlor guy. They got a lot of stuff. Make sure you check that out when you're in the village of Sleepy Hollow. They got some great pizza.
And if you order the appetizer sampler.
Yes.
You won't need to order anything else, because Sean and I ordered a pizza and the appetizer sampler. And we ate half the sampler and about four slices of pizza, and we were stuffed to the max.
Yeah, and it was fairly cheap, too. I mean, to be in New York.
Yeah. But that was our excursion.
That was it, guys. But there's some places you go to, and it leaves an impact on you. And you just wonder, man. You know, I remember we were sitting there in that cemetery. And when we weren't working or doing something, I sat down there on the grass. And you just get that quiet time, that moment of zen. And I was sitting there thinking, you know.
Oh, good grief.
Exactly. Thanks, Charlie Brown. I thought, how cool is this? Just like Gettysburg. It wasn't as, you know, powerful, but to walk amongst history, that's what's amazing to me. So,
well, see, the next time you come down, Sean, I'll have to bring you down to Edgar Allan Poe's house in New York City.
Yeah, in New York. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wish we could have done that.
Where his wife passed away in that house in New York.
In New York. And then he had one in Baltimore.
Yep, he had one in Baltimore. But the house in New York was where he was living when his wife passed away.
Uh-huh.
And that particular house was also, you know, where he wrote, I believe that's where he wrote Luna Loon,
yeah, okay.
And
that was that porno from the...
And, but...
Demon Hunter!
Sean!
We better stop and pause for the calls a minute and do tonight's guest. What do you think?
Okay, Sean, okay. Let's talk.
Anyway, guys, check out Sleepy Hollow if you're out there. Demon Hunter, tonight's guest.
Dun da dun.
Is that loud enough, you think?
I hear it.
Okay. Tonight's guest, Fritz Zimmerman, author, lecturer, all-around nice guy, guys. Author of The Nephilim Chronicles, Fallen Angels in the Ohio Valley, guys. Tonight, we're going digging. We're going giant hunting. We're going to talk about the real-life giants, the fallen angels, the product of mortal women and angels that roamed this earth, guys. Right here in the Midwest, too, Demon Hunter. Yeah, we got plenty of it, guys. What am I thinking of here, Demon Hunter? What's the big things over in England that everybody wants to go? Stonehenge!
Stonehenge, yeah. There you go.
Right underneath our feet, guys. Here in the Midwest, we got our own Stonehenge, but we don't even know it. We don't even know it. Fritz is going to tell us what to look for. The history behind these, well, they look like grave mounds, burial mounds, whatever. We got lots of pictures tonight, lots of information. Coming up tonight on your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show, Fritz Zimmerman.
There you go.
There you go. A little rusty.
Why are the sons of God lying with the daughters of men?
It's so interesting because we started looking into that, Demon Hunter, and this is not, it's legend, but there's some truth to this. You know, there usually is with the legend, but I mean, there's an actual storyline behind this. Things have been found. We'll talk about that tonight, though, on the Mystifying Oracle Radio. Yes.
Does this give pause to think, Sean, that, you know, if these creatures lived there and they were buried there?
They're not creatures. They were humans.
They were Nephilim. They
humanoid,
were giants.
Yeah, humanoid. Some say demons.
They were buried there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our own studies show that the human race only made it to America here about 15,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe, Sean, there's a little bit more to creation than we thought.
See? And it might be right here beneath our feet, guys.
There you go, because how could they have been buried there just a few thousand years ago if nobody was here?
See? There you go. There you go.
These stories occurred only a few thousand years ago.
I don't think they're all gone, because I've actually dated some women in the past that were pretty much giant. I mean, I've seen some giant people out there. You know, these are big gals.
Yeah, I've watched some ladies' basketball. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, they might be here. We're not calling them Nephilim, which is, I believe Nephilim is means giant. Something like that. Did you know that, Demon Hunter?
I did not know that, Sean.
Whoa! Demon Hunter!
Yes, Sean?
In the news!
In the news?
It's always hot. It's always entertaining. It's always exciting, and it's fresh, and it starts right
now.
All right.
Hey, brother, you know, it's one of those things where we sit around and we start to read the news, and folks at home, remember the Ghostman and Demon Hunter drinking game.
Yes.
If Sean and I make a mistake while we're reading the news, you have to take a drink. And since we don't actually read the news before we read it on the air, we make a lot of mistakes. So we recommend if you're listening to this show while driving your car on podcast, don't play the drinking game. If you're planning to drive home after you listen to the podcast, don't play the drinking game.
Yes.
But if you're home right now, sitting alone sitting alone in your home, listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show, this is the time to pull out something tasty.
Yeah.
Because when we misread a word, like right now, you should take a drink.
Yeah.
Right along with us, folks, here at the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. And
drink
we take
up.
No responsibility for what happens after the G&D in the news.
Don't be a moron.
Yeah. Drink up, guys. That's what we should do. You want me to lead off here, Demon Hunter?
Why don't you take the lead, Sean?
Tonight's news, guys, this comes out of our good friends from, not out of our good friends, but from our good friends at the Huffington Post. Federico's, right, Demon Hunter?
There's your first drink, folks.
Yeah,
I took one.
Drink up, guys. Federico's Mexican restaurant causes bloody diarrhea outbreak.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Can you believe this? Offers free burritos as an apology. Yeah. This is going to be a good one, guys. The best way to an American's heart is through their stomach. Everybody knows that. Even when that food has given them horrible bouts of bloody diarrhea, apparently. Federico's Mexican food, a restaurant chain, drew fire from the public in their anuses. After its Litchfield, Arizona location caused an E. coli outbreak that gave 74 patrons grossly bloody bouts of diarrhea. Huh? Yeah. A complainant said, according to UPI, but in an expert public relations move, Federico's hired a cleaning expert and will offer free burritos on September 16th. Huh?
Hey, there we go.
Says the queen of clean, Linda Cobb, who appeared on Oprah, will be there, according to the restaurant's Facebook page. Cobb reports that Federico's ad that the restaurant now uses dish soap and bleach at the same time, so you can rest easy on the toilet. That's it, guys. Huffington Post.
Billy Mays here with another fantastic product.
Yeah.
If you're like other Americans, you love to eat Chipotle. You would hate all those terrible bloodstains in your underwear.
You like that? Oh, that's amazing. I love it. But that's it.
I had that one queued up for you, bro.
That is awesome. I didn't know, actually. I didn't know if you were playing that or if it was like a side pop-up that started playing. I didn't know. I was going, oh, no, what are we going to do here? I got to shut this down somehow. And kept playing. That was perfect, though. Bloody stains in your... Now, let me ask you something. Would you go back if you just pooped
your pants? They are offering free burritos, Sean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might go back. I mean, a lot of people would.
And nice and supple.
Like a lady.
Like a lady.
Apparently, your rectum isn't after you go to Frederico.
No, it's a dangerous world in the when you're dealing with bloody diarrhea.
It is, man. It is. It's crazy
what is the appropriate apology for bloody diarrhea, Sean?
A thank you card, at least, for eating there, and an apology, and maybe some
underwear.
Toilet paper. Two-ply toilet paper, maybe.
The extra soft kind.
Yeah. Yeah. I would do that. So what's next on the news stories, Demon Hunter? Do we got any?
Well, rolling right in from bloody diarrhea... Holy water bacteria. Samples with up to 62 million per milliliter found in Austrian study.
Yeah.
So basically, tainted holy water, folks. Tainted holy water.
That's sacrilege, huh?
I tell you, so much for anointing the sick, says the Huffington Post. An Austrian study of holy water that tested 21 springs in Austria and 18 founts in Vienna found samples contained up to 62 million bacteria per milliliter, ABC News reported. Additionally, 86% of the samples tested contained dangerous levels of bacteria commonly found in fecal matter, such as E. coli. With that much bacteria, you'd be better off blasting yourself with melted ice from a fast food restaurant in China. Now, remember, folks, this is not coming from the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter.
No, don't do it, guys.
Water containing high concentrations of such human harmful bacteria, have a drink, could lead to serious gastronomical diseases if ingested, according to the studies, which were published in the Journal of Water and Health. That's a major threat to people who use water from holy springs as personal drinking water. Well, are you really supposed to drink holy springs as personal drinking water?
I don't know.
I mean, do you really show up with like a bucket and go, I need to take this home to cook dinner?
Oh, man.
But we need to warn people against drinking from these sources, said Dr. Alexander Kashner, study researcher and microbiologist at the Medical University of Vienna, which conducted the study.
Oh.
Study authors also continue. Study authors also contended that holy water in busy churches and hospital chapels could potentially spread infection.
Well, yeah.
The busier the church or hospital, the higher the risk.
So what?
Just something to think about and keep in mind for your next exorcism.
Oh, that's great. That's great, Demon Hunter. So now you gotta watch out when you go to church. You can't even do the holy water thing.
Well, I just guess they should actually put out little hand wipes before you, like, spritz yourself with the holy water. You should wipe your hands clean.
So is it it would have to be the priest, then, that weren't washing their hands, or...
Well, you know, they've got those little trays outside the church. Before you walk in, you dip your hand in and bless yourself with the holy water before you walk in.
Well, yeah. Okay. And anybody could come up and after they just went to the toilet and...
Anyway. Yeah, you know, you remember to wash your hands before you, like, eat. You would think you would remember to wash your hands before you dipped it in the holy water.
Okay, here's a good one, Demon Hunter. Moving right along, because we're running out of time here. We're at 747. Daniel Hotcock. That's a real name, guys. Cooper. Daniel Hotcock Cooper, convicted of sex with the Land Rover. You ready for this, Demon Hunter? This is out of our friends from the Huffington Post here, guys. Ready? A man with the self-proclaimed nickname, Hot... I'm not going to say it again. I can't say it again. Is in hot water after allegedly getting naked and attempting sex with a Land Rover. A court in Wales, the UK, you crazy UK people, recently convicted Daniel Cooper, a 24-year-old, of indecent exposure. He was banned from going outside between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. on Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays for the next 3 months. The order stems from a August 18th incident where Cooper, who is known by the nickname Hotcock, I gotta say it, was caught on surveillance video getting naked and then grinding against a blue 4x4 Land Rover Discovery. The New York Daily Times reported.
I love my car. I love my car.
Oh my God. Cooper told the court he was so drunk at the time that he did not remember his autoerotic encounter. Autoerotic until he saw the video. The Land Rover was not available for comment, but it wasn't the only inanimate object that caught Cooper's eye during the evening, according to the Mirror. Earlier in the evening, witnesses saw him bumping and grinding with the counter on a kebab shop and simulating sex on the floor with his pants around his ankles. That's just a Friday night, isn't it? He was also seen walking down the streets with his pants pulled down. Cooper, a father of three, also urinated in the streets. When he was arrested, he admitted to the officers that he rarely drank. What were you drinking, man? According to the Telegraph, he rarely drank. That's what he told the cops. Beside the three-month nighttime ban, Cooper was ordered to pay $134 in fine. His attorney, Gary Harvey, told the court that his client was mortified by his actions and that his behavior towards cars and kebab counters... was out of character. He's a responsible family man who looks after the children while his wife went out to work.
I normally have the utmost respect for automobiles. Oh. I did not have sexual relations with that Land Rover.
Dude. Oh, my God. I wouldn't even show up to court. Just throw me in prison. I have nothing to say. And may I suggest don't let him stay home with the kids anymore, guys. That's...
Oh, my goodness, John. And what... lured you to reading that story.
That's the news. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a fake story, but it's not, guys. There's people having sex with Land Rovers, so I go out in your driveway, park it inside. That's why it's important to have a indoor garage, two car.
I blame the people who leave their Land Rovers on the street. If you're gonna look that sexy, you got it coming.
You got it. That Land Rover had it coming. What about the kebab counter? Did that have it coming too? Yeah.
That just scares me.
What an idiot.
Anyway, God, Sean.
I love people. They give us great news. Demon Hunter.
One last thing I want to point out to people, since we are talking about you know, some biblical type characters this evening.
Yes, we are.
Throw out there some herpes infected monkeys threat to Florida.
Okay.
That's right. This is also from the Huffington Post, folks. Things are getting downright biblical in Florida, where residents and the wildlife face the affliction worthy of their own book of Exodus. Most recently, there's been news of a healthy number of, I guess healthy would be the wrong word, monkeys running wild in Ocala, infected with herpes.
Hold on, Demon Hunter, hold on one second. I gotta do this for you.
Don't judge me, monkey.
Here, one,
don't judge me, monkey.
But the state's pets go much further to include frankenfish.
Ooh.
And possibly super snakes and rat-sized snails that are considered in.
Have you seen Mountain? Lena?
To have an attitude problem. Anyway, so top nine biblical type terrors in Florida right now, in Ocala.
Oh my
the
God.
Herpes infected rhesus monkeys hanging out at Silver Springs. According to the New York Post, they have captured most of the 700 monkeys they've captured 700 monkeys. Most of them have been tested positive for herpes B. Herpes.
Yeah.
These slimy snails, which we talked about a while back, Sean, they're actually eating people's houses.
Oh, man.
They're eating the wood off of people's houses, the stucco and everything like that. Giant snails, the size of rats, the bigger than you can't hold one in your hand.
Jesus, man. Could you still dump salt on something like that?
I'm ready for salt.
You would need a pound of salt. Yeah, what if you like dug a ditch around your house and filled it with like that salt rock?
It's a good thing Hot Cock doesn't live there.
I'm ready for salt.
those snails are the size of a Land Rover.
Yeah.
They have caught 15, or they there are 15. 150,000 Burmese pythons slithering freely in Florida. Some of these things can reach 20 feet.
Ugh.
Rock pythons, a North African python that shouldn't even be on this continent.
Yes.
Thank
you, weekend pet keepers of exotic animals.
They, these things can grow big enough to eat small dogs.
Right.
They're super snakes, and they're nasty. They're mean. There are mosquitoes now. There have been 18 cases of dengue fever, from confirmed through mosquitoes in Florida right now.
Oh no!
The citrus is suffering from citrus greening disease. Where do we get all our oranges from? Their lakes are being infested with snakeheads. These things can actually crawl out of the water to move from stream to stream and have razor-sharp teeth. Let's see here. Lionfish.
Oh, good.
If you've ever seen the poisonous lionfish, Sean, but it has been found now in up to 250 feet of water off the coast of Florida.
Oh,
cane toads have been released in the sugarcane fields to control the white grubs, but now the cane toads are out of control. There's something biblical right there for you.
See?
They actually secrete a poison that can kill dogs and that can poison dogs and cats.
Have they actually killed dogs and cats out there?
Apparently the poison is strong enough too. So there were reports a few years ago of dogs like chasing after the toads, eating the toads, and dying from it.
Oh.
Octopus babies. There's been an octopus boom that has pretty much destroyed the crab season off the coast of the Keys.
Oh, no. There goes Joe's Crab Shack business, man.
Yeah, and you remember, you came out here to the East Coast. You were loving the fact that I could drive you down the street and buy you a lobster for $15.
I know, it's over.
And, imagine that comes up here. So 9 possible biblical type stories going on right now in Florida, folks. And still, one day, I intend to move there unless all the snails eat the houses.
Yeah,
first.
So the day you get out of the car and you breathe and go, look at the ocean. You go, whoosh, whoosh, there's going to be 2 toed nails in your neck and a big snail is going to eat your face.
And there'll be a monkey ready to spread something awful on me right there.
That's it. Okay, Demon Hunter, we got about 4 minutes before the guest segment before we take a break. What do you say we do Legend X?
Legend X? That sounds awesome.
Legend X series. Guys, it's a G&D original series where we talk about Demon Hunter.
Basically, Sean and I go out and look down a legend, look up a legend, so that you don't have to. Because we love stories and storytelling, and that's what legends are all about. We go out and track down the truth behind the myth, because these aren't just stories. These could be legends.
Tonight's Legend X, Giants. Did you like that?
That was right up there, Sean.
Yeah, thank you. Giants, guys! We're going to find out tonight. Did they really roam the earth at one time, Demon Hunter?
Well, we're going to be talking to a very special guest tonight about just that aspect of it. But there is that biblical aspect to it, Sean. And you know I love the Bible, where they say it the Nephilim were the giants in the earth.
Giants in the earth, yeah.
They were the offspring of the sons of God and the daughters of men, according to Genesis 6:4. That giants inhabited Canaan, according to Numbers 13:33. And similar biblical stories in the Old Testament, you spoke of giants all the time. Of course, there's the famous David and Goliath giant story.
Yes.
But that leads back more to the fact that they believed that the Hebrews were a smaller race compared to the ones they were fighting around them.
That's it. And I you know what? I'm excited to get the guest on tonight because, you know, since I was a kid, always heard the story of David and Goliath. Everybody's always said, you know, David slew the giant. And, you know, playing football and everything, the coach say, you know, David and Goliath, smaller guy, sometimes wins. You got to go out there. You got to keep your head up and everything else. So,
you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, Sean. Throw a little tip, biblical story out there. If you actually read the story, you hear how David went down and picked up 7 smooth stones by the river.
Ah.
And that was because Goliath had 6 brothers.
Yeah, that was the part of the Bible they left out, huh? After David
No, it's in there. You just have to read past that verse to realize that Goliath had 6 brothers, and that's why David picked up 7 smooth stones. But when he killed Goliath with one blow, everybody ran away.
Oh, I see. Well, Demon Hunter, what do you say? It's about that time.
It's about that time where we can truly get into tonight's Legend X and speak to our special guest about the Nephilim, the giants, and the fallen angels.
There you go. Guys, once again, tonight's guest, Fritz Zimmerman, author of the Nephilim Chronicles, Fallen Angels in the Ohio Valley, guys. We're going looking for giants. They might be closer than you think. Tonight, our guest, Fritz Zimmerman, we step back in the shadows and find the answers, guys. Tonight's band Up for Days. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Demon Hunter?
Stick around.
Stick around.
We see ourselves, our soul, and emotion. To the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. Take it easy.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back, guys. It's Sunday night. Welcome back to the Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Demon Hunter, we've had some smart cats on here in the past. Stanton, huh?
Stanton Friedman. Every time he comes on the show, at the end, I feel like looking at him and going, I have a pony.
2+2, Stanton. 2+2. That's all I got to say. But we got a smart cat on tonight, and really, he's mystified me with these books, and just talking to him on the phone. Tonight's guest, guys, lecturer and author of Nephilim, Fallen Angels of the Ohio Valley. Please help us welcome Fritz Zimmerman. Fritzy, what's up, buddy?
Hey, how's everyone tonight?
You sound good. You sound clear. I like that.
Hey, Sean, I'm handling it good on my end here. I really am.
You are. You got Fritz on, and we got the opportunity to talk to Fritz about 3 weeks ago, and he is awesome, guys. He's awesome. And I tell you, we got so much stuff to talk to you about tonight and so little time, Fritz. I don't know where to start off. I mean, back to the biblical days, I'm just blown away with the thought of giants once roaming the Midwest.
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence. There's over 300 historical accounts of them finding skeletons and burial mounds from 7 to some as big as 9.5 feet.
Wow, 7 to 9.5 feet. And these aren't just one isolated thing. This was several like small tribes of these people.
Yeah, probably over the span of a couple thousand years, they were coming over to North America. And the ones that I really spent the most time explaining and giving the evidence is the ones in the Ohio Valley. And those actually have their roots in the biblical lands and are the same giants that they talked extensively about in the book of Deuteronomy.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Now, I myself, I took the family out, guys, and we went to, under advisement from Fritz and doing research for this show, I wanted to see the mounds because I'm from Indiana, and we have mounds, I found out, all over the Midwest, as Fritz is going to tell us about tonight. And I went to Mound State Park in Anderson, Indiana, and I seen these things. And you know what, Fritz? If I didn't know what I was looking for, I would have walked right over top of them thinking, you know, somebody made them with a backhoe or something, you know?
And I can just see the questions now. Mr. Burris, what is a weekend out with your children like? Well, we go out and hunt down mounds.
Mounds. Yeah, absolutely. I was blown away. What has kept them so structured over the years? I mean, that seems like it's mystical in itself.
Well, it's kind of a misnomer. Mound State Park is actually a series of hinges. And you think of Stonehenge, and you think of the stones in the middle. But the actual hinge is an earthwork. And it's a circular earthwork with an interior ditch and a gateway that generally aligns to a solar event. And about 90% of the hinges in the Ohio Valley are aligned to either the May 1st sunrise, the summer or winter solstice, or the equinox. So it's called Mound State Park, but mounds typically have burials in them, and those are conical earthen mounds. And then Mound State Park is really kind of a religious, solar, celestial, lunar temples that were set up for alignments to different celestial events.
That's amazing. Now, I know when I went out there, Fritz, and I was looking at this, they say, and of course you was telling me about the Parks Department and everything, they say that it was it even says, guys, they're uncertain, but they believe it was this tribe of Indians that had built this thing. What do you think about that? And where did the giants come into play? What kind of evidence here, you know?
Well, there at Mound State Park, over by the road, they were doing some road construction, and they hit a cavern, and they had a tomb that they found. And when they dug into it, of course, the smells from 2,000 years ago came out of this thing. And there was seven men in this rectangular tomb, all of them of large size, that were buried underground. So there may be more of those at Mound State Park that were buried in tombs and didn't have a mound that was over the top. But just in that county, there's three reports. One report was a skeleton that they found that was 9 foot. And, of course, my theory is that these were not Native Americans as we would think of them now, but these were actually people that had come over here around 1500 BC or as late as 1500 BC. They were taking copper out and moving it back into the Mediterranean and supplying the Egyptian and the Hittite armies and eventually the Hebrew armies. And another contingent that would later become the Sioux Indians actually kind of merged with these Nephilim or the Amorite tribe from the biblical lands. And it's why the Sioux are some of the largest Indians in North America. And they also have a genetic marker called Haplo X, which originates from the Sea of Galilee. And the Sioux has more of that genetic marker than any other Native American group. So we have the heights and we have a genetic marker that traces parts of their heritage back to the Sea of Galilee.
Wow. Now, are we dealing with the same type of people that David and Goliath? Are we talking about the same type of giants here, same race?
Well, yeah. In the Bible, it says that Goliath was a remnant of the Rephaim or the Nephilim. So, I mean, as a tribe, they had been long gone. However, he was a remnant of that. So not all of them were gone, but they certainly weren't in the numbers that they were in the time of Abraham.
Now
1800 BC.
I'm just wondering here, are the giants the Nephilim, or were the Nephilim the angels that supposedly bred with men and created the Eloid?
Nephilim is really another word for giant.
Okay.
And the Nephilim were, the story in the Bible is that the sons of God, these angels, descended on earth onto Mount Hermon, signed a pact between themselves to mate with these women, and the offspring of these angels and women was this giant race.
Okay, so then the Eloid were the children of the Nephilim and the human women.
Right. Okay. The Nephilim are the children of the angels and the women.
Okay.
Now, when I was doing some research and I was reading up on this stuff, and nothing out there like yours, Fritz, I just wanted to show you that and tell listeners around the world, there's no books that I found out there that's as in-depth as yours when it comes to this topic. These Nephilim, Now, they're the offspring of mortal women and the fallen angels. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the angels, when they were had fallen from heaven, they were kicked out. This is what the story or the Bible says. They were booted out of heaven with Lucifer, and they came to earth. Now, if they made it, these angels with these women, are we talking that these Nephilim could have been demonic in some form?
Well, you can go that route. Many people do, and there's certainly evidence for that. And one thing that's important, and especially is going to be of great interest to your audience that are, you know, into ghosts, is they believed in ancestral worship, and the burial mounds were conduits that connected them to their ancestors. They worshiped their ancestors. So their ancestors, once put in the mound, didn't go to Valhalla or heaven. They stayed right here on earth. And those mounds are conduits that they could communicate with the dead. And that is why Ohio and Indiana and Pennsylvania and New York, where all the main areas where these mounds are the most haunted places in America. The most haunted place in America is Moundsville Prison, and it has the largest burial mound in the Ohio Valley, right in its front lawn. And that is not coincidence.
Oh, wow. Do you think it's like remnants, the energy left over from these beings, or it's
Yeah, they're still there. Those spirits are still there. Those doors are still open. If you have a burial mound, you have an open door to the other world.
So would you say out at Mound State Park, now I seen a lady out there, she had her crystals out. I didn't have time to talk to her, I was with the kids, but she had crystals out, Demon Hunter, and she was at the base of the Great Mound, Fritz, and she had all her crystals set up and she was doing some type of ceremony. Now, is this common practice with a lot of people? Do you come in contact with these types when you're out around these mounds?
Not too much. I generally go out in the winter, and the winter months are the best time to see the mounds because all the foliage is off of them, and a lot of them are not maintained that well. So you can always see the hilltop fortifications or earthworks, which are ceremonial centers, and you can see a lot of the sites where the mounds and earthworks are much better in the winter months. So I'm pretty isolated. I'm usually the only guy out there when it's 5 degrees outside with a 20-mile-an-hour wind.
Oh, yeah.
That's out exploring mound sites.
You would think in a place called Mound State Park, they would take better care of the mounds.
Well, they do. The mounds are pretty good.
That's one of my greatest peeves. Actually, in the middle of the largest hinge, the big circle that you went to, there was a burial mound right in the middle of that. And that burial mound acted as a solar marker to the winter and summer solstice in line with the other earthworks that are around it. And the archaeologists destroyed the mound, and it's just flat out there now. So they never replaced it.
Oh,
So the solar marker for 2,000 years is now gone.
My God. I'd hate to have been the guy operating the backhoe that day, you know? Hey, what'd you do? Oh, well, I just destroyed something, you know, from dated BC. Sorry. I mean, how do they do that, Fritz? How do you not, you know, how do we save these? I mean, they're becoming less and less, right? I mean, I know there's people that buy homes. There's people that buy homes, and they buy homes, and these mounds, Nathan, are right there. Fritz has sent some pictures. Let me see if I can pull it up here. Of a little white house out here. Here it is, guys. And you can see the tree sitting right on top of this mound. These people probably don't even know. They're just putting swing sets on top of them, you know?
Yeah.
Now,
is that the mound with a house on it? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, the house is right next to it. It's a tree coming right out of the mound, and there's a little white house right next to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how...
Yeah, I would...
Having gone back and looked at these stories, Fritz, obviously, you take the information that's biblical that's thrown to you, and then the actual archaeology of the area and what they actually carbon date the bones at, things like that. How many of these things line up for you to be like to actually line up to say the Nephilim and not necessarily like a race of freaks?
One is that we know it's not giganticism because of the bone structure, so. Many times doctors evaluated the bones, and if you have giganticism, your bones are all, you know, abnormal. I mean, it's easy to spot, but they would generally say that the band was just big. I mean, it was perfectly proportioned, and they mentioned perfectly proportioned in a lot of cases. Also, many of the skulls have more upper Paleolithic types, which is protruding brow ridge, kind of a sloped skull, so they were more of a Cro-Magnon looking people, which is also what they have described some of the remains over in the biblical lands where they found Amorite or large skeletons over there, had that same kind of archaic type skulls, and so we can match it up there. But one of the most compelling pieces of evidence is that the earthworks that were constructed were used using a numerical sequence or a codex called Gematra. And that dictated that 666 was the number for the sun and 1080 was the number for the moon. And almost all of the hinges are either 666 feet in circumference or 660 feet. And so, and then the square temples, which were lunar temples, have a size, each one of them, 1080 feet on each side. And that certainly isn't coincidence.
And, of course, listeners around the world that don't know, the 666 Mark of the Beast, I believe, is what Fritz is making reference to with these things. And, wow. That's all I mean, are you the first one to discover this, Fritz? How did you find this out?
Yes. Well, you know, my search. I went over 700 mountain earthwork sites for the travel guide that is a supplement to the Fallen Angels. So I personally investigated over 700 sites, and numbers just kept reoccurring. And, of course, looking deeper into that, I found that it's like, well, that matches perfectly with the Gematra Codex, which happened to be developed by the Amorites when they controlled Babylon around 1950 B.C. They were also the people that developed all the high math that we use today, a pi square root, all of that. Pi square root is easily found in the construction of the mounds and earthworks. So you can tell that they were squaring a circle. You'll have a circular earthwork attached to a square earthwork with equal areas, meaning they would have had to known how to square a circle. And that's complicated mathematics. So it wasn't a guy standing in the middle with a rope making a circle.
Right.
Developed mathematics were used, and sacred geometry that matches up with that of the ancient world. Of circle with a dot was always the symbol for the sun, which is basically what a hinge is, and the square was always the symbol for the Earth Mother, and that all shows up in the Ohio Valley. So it all matches up.
Now, go ahead, Demon Hunter.
I was just going to say, Fritz, I'm a Mason, so sacred mathematics is very important to me. It's a lot of what we're based on in Masonry, and the whole idea of the circle and the sun, and the architecture, the squared circle, as you're saying, not found anywhere else really in American Indian designs.
No, it's not. So obviously somebody brought that technology over here, or they would still been using it.
Now, you had said earlier the discussion of them digging up minerals and things like that to bring overseas. I that's honestly something new to me, because at that time period, like the digging up minerals here to bring to, as you were saying, to build in the Middle East. Could you go a little bit more into that? Because I know nothing about that.
Well, we know that the copper up in Isle St. Royal, up at Lake Superior, was being extracted around 2700 B.C. This matches up perfectly with the early Bronze Age, where you needed both bronze and tin. Of course, the largest tin deposits are right there where Stonehenge is. The largest copper deposits are right here. Not only is it a lot of copper, but it was 99.9% pure with just one little bit of silver in it. So they could pull it out of the ground. They didn't have to cook it. They didn't have to burn off the impurities. It certainly was economic factors that would have brought them over here. Copper was gold during the Bronze Age. They couldn't get enough of it. Of course, all the weapons for the Hittite Egyptian armies. The Hebrews were also arming themselves about that time. So it was in high demand, and copper deposits in Europe and the Middle East were soon depleted, and so they were looking for new areas to extract it. So I think that originally is what brought them over here. They have found Lake Michigan copper in Egypt. Of course, archaeologists don't want to say that they've done that, but they have found it over there. We know that there was that some of it was getting over there. And there's 50,000 tons of copper that are missing from Isle St. Royal, and nobody knows where it is.
Wow.
Missing? You mean missing from the mountain?
Well, they know that there's 50,000 tons that they just can't account for, because in mounds they might find a copper knife or a copper this or a copper that, you know, but there's just all this copper that's just gone. I mean, they have no account of where it went. And, of course, since archaeologists aren't diffusionists but isolationists, saying that no one ever came over here, they can't explain that. But to somebody like me that's a diffusionist, it's like, well, yeah, it all went over to the Middle East and was used to make weapons.
Now, why would...
It was around 1500 B.C. that the Amorites or the giant race was being knocked out of the biblical lands by Joshua, and the Egyptians coming north and the Hittites coming south, and the Celts were moving into England and knocking them out of there around 1500 B.C., and it just so happens that 1500 B.C. is when the mining operations stopped up in Isle St. Royal.
Oh, wow, man. This is truly amazing. I mean, people go overseas to see Stonehenge and everything, when the truth is we have something just as amazing right here in the Midwest. And people walk across it every day or walk past it. You know, half the people I talk to, Fritz, don't even know about these parks, mounds, or don't even know about the mounds. They have no idea what they are.
No, it's amazing. I know. It's like, it's an incredible world, and you can go through central Indiana into southern Ohio and see a site about every 20 minutes. It's amazing. Mounds that are 60 or 70 foot tall. And yeah, nobody really knows about it. It has all this back history that is related to the biblical lands, that there's fallen angels and spirits and all this other backstory that's involved with that. And because archaeologists don't want people to believe that anyone came over here, there's really been kind of a down low as far as promoting any of these mound or earthwork sites.
Well, you know, Fritz, in the Bible it talked about how the Satan and his minions, they hated, or Lucifer, they hated or were jealous of the love that God, the Creator, had for the human race. And that jealousy is what eventually led to, or some have said, led to the fallen angels being kicked out of heaven or whatever. Why do you think that they would mate with mortal women to make these, like in defiance of God?
I think so. It was, you know, they were just rebels, and, you know, that was something they weren't supposed to do, but they signed this pact on Mount Hermon and to do it. And this story transgresses almost every ancient religion, through the Greeks, through the Bible, through the Egyptians, through the Hindu. Everyone has the same story that they tell about this giant race that was created. Even in South America, that story exists.
Wow. Now, I'm showing a picture
it's this thread that certainly can't be denied through all those ancient histories, that right. It was true.
Now, I'm showing pictures live while you talk, Fritz, about you and your books and stuff, and I actually have a National Geographic picture up that says Unearthing the Giants. And, you know, this is very real, people. Fritz just isn't making this up. They've discovered these bones, remains have been found right here in the Ohio Valley, which is truly amazing. I mean, you guys need to go out and get Fritz's book right away, or go to go anywhere online. They have a little write-up, right, Fritz? You did a write-up online about your book and some of the stuff where they can go out and look for these things on their own, right?
Well, yeah, I have Nephilim Chronicles, Fallen Angels in the Ohio Valley, and there's also the Nephilim Chronicles, a travel guide to the ancient ruin in the Ohio Valley. And it is by far the most comprehensive travel guide. Like I said, I investigated over 700 sites. I have 222 mound sites.
Jeez.
In five states there in the Ohio Valley. And I'm going to direct you to sites that Ohio's not even promoting. So you may go to a site like Newark and not realize that there's large mounds and there's some other really big, you know, things to look at within a couple miles of there. I wanted to, everything that the archaeologists and the Ohio Historical Society had address restricted, I removed the restrictions. Those are now available to see. There is 80% of everything in Ohio they wanted to keep a secret, and I removed the secret.
Why the secret, Fritz?
For everyone to see.
Why the secret, do you think?
Well, secret because if nobody knows about them and they want to go and dig into it, then who's to say? Who's to put up any kind of fight against it?
Exactly.
So it's just been like the archaeologist's secret and the Ohio Historical Society's secret. Well, I removed that.
That's amazing. Congratulations, brother. You're about the only one out there. Well... You're starting a. You have a small group, right, to save these things?
No longer on their Christmas list or Christmas card list, but that's okay.
Now, have you been approached by any of these Parks Department people when you go out trying to say, you know, you're goofy, your theories are wrong? I mean, has anybody challenged you with this?
Well, yeah, you know, it's the same old thing of, you know, that, you know, yeah, this is just untrue. You know, that this is a fantasy, and of course they're going to dismiss it because, you know, they have their whole careers based on the Beringia theory, saying that the only people that came to North America was across the Alaska ice bridge and then down and in. So, yeah, they will always refute it.
What do you think about...
But there's overwhelming evidence that it's true.
Now, you're sort of a ufologist too, right?
I've talked to a few UFO groups because, you know, their take is that it's not fallen angels, but it was actually people from another planet or aliens that came and they did the genetic manipulation. So, you know, I think we're saying the same story, and I really don't have a problem with that, because whether it's an angel coming from the heavens or it's an alien coming from the heavens, I think we're talking about the same story. So I really don't find too much of a contradiction in what they may want to believe and then, you know, what my story is, which is more the biblical story. Biblical story based on fact, because we have, you know, the skeletal remains and we have, you know, it's a layered, there's etymology of language that we find over within the Native Americans where they're using Hebrew words and some other things that, you know, I'm trying to track, a people from one place to another and layer about seven different items where we can identify Hebrew type society being over here.
Now, if angels did breed with mortal women, what do you think about powers and magic and things like that? Would they have transferred that on to their offspring?
Possibly. You know, it's amazing. Because we track the tribe of the Amorites, which is the main tribe in the Bible that they talk about as being giants. And, you know, they were the first to come up with math. They were the first to come up with sacred geography. They were the first to establish laws. They did a lot of things technologically that were far advanced. They were the ones that was developing metallurgy and the advanced weapons that they were selling to the different armies. So they were an advanced people. And in the book of Enoch, it talks about secrets that the angels shared with these people. And part of it's metallurgy, and part of it's math, and part of it is knowing the signs of the sun and the stars, which is, of course, what the hinges and the stone circles were all about, was tracking the heavens. And so you really can go through the book of Enoch, and it's a list of everything that these people knew. And it all matches up when you look at the actual physical remains of what they left in earthworks and stone circles, etc., you know, from England and then over here in the Ohio Valley. But it was the same people that built Stonehenge that built the hinges in the Ohio Valley and the mounds. And there's also large skeletons in and around Stonehenge and all throughout the England and up into Scotland.
That's amazing, man. Now, how do we know when we see these mounds? Because I, when I was out there at the park, I was thinking, I wonder if each one of them has a burial spot in it, a burial mound. You know, if they might have put the body there kind of, if there was energy or some type of magic, or I'm sorry, what, for lack of a better term, magic, if they put a body there, the body's there to charge this site, you know what I mean?
Well, of course they did there in the largest henge. The one that's next to that had burials in it. So yes, that's true. And then we have these subterranean burials that are around there. They found one, but who knows how many more are around there.
Wow, that's amazing. Demon Hunter, I know Fritz has
Okay. Go ahead.
Fritz, I know you're on a I know you're on such a tight schedule here. You've had one heck of a week, man. Thanks so much for coming on. Demon Hunter, do you have anything else for Fritz?
I don't. Honestly, I'm left unawares because like so much of this is so much to take in. Honestly, I would need to sit back and look at all this again like 10 times over before I could have another question for him that would make sense.
That's what I'm saying, Fritz. We're going to have you back on once we can process this and come up with 100 more questions. Hey, Fritz, we're going to close out the show. Can you stay on the line just one second, brother?
Hunters go to some of these sites and see what we can find because spirits are there. And I've seen shadow people. I've heard voices. I've seen some really creepy things in those woods.
Yeah, we didn't get to go into that.
Didn't you tell us once that while like on the hunt for some of this information, you encountered something demonic?
Yeah, across from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, I was in Gallipolis shooting a mound site there, and there was a voice. There was something that grabbed the wheel of my car. I was having a hard time just getting out of this cemetery that was on this ridge overlooking the bridge and the city of Point Pleasant. I had never even heard of Mothman before this trip, but when I got back, I was informed by a friend that I was in some sort of demonic triangle there, and so it was like, wow. It's like, yeah, it's like, that was crazy. That was really scary when I was up there, but yeah. I was the only one in the cemetery, and that there was a voice as close as like 3 feet from me.
Oh, wow. Now, hey, Fritz, stay on.
It was just another mound site to me. It was the last one before heading to Charleston. And even the Native Americans wouldn't live in that area. They called the Kanawha the River of Evil Spirits.
Hmm. Wow.
And that's what runs through that area. So, yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of the next episode I'd like to get into is somewhat of a ghost hunt and see what kind of paranormal activity we can find at some of these sites.
Now, I'd be game for that. What do you think, Demon Hunter?
I think that we got to take a trip out to some mountains, Sean.
Well, we got Fritz's number, or we will have his new number. Are you doing okay since the bike accident, man?
Well, it's the same number, just a new phone.
Okay. Well, we're glad to hear you're okay. I tell you what, Fritz, we're going to close out the show. Stay on the line 1 second, okay?
Okay.
Okay, I got one last question for you, and then we're going to close out. Do you think that some of the offspring are still with us? And if so, are they? Do you think the devil might walk amongst us still?
That is the million-dollar question, and I cannot answer yes or no to that. I really don't know. There's people like L.A. Marzulli who says that's it, that they are going to be the genesis of the Antichrist.
Wow.
Now I have a question for you, considering the height of these Nephilim and what goes on with them. Do you spend a lot of time watching the NBA to see if there's any unusual behavior there?
No, there's no connection.
Okay.
No connection there.
Good
but
to know.
One of these guys at 9'6" would have been alive today. Of course, he probably would have done quite well in the NBA.
Right. Especially if he had some kind of powers. He would just zapped everybody else, man.
It was like he was there and then he was gone.
Magic height.
All right, guys. Stay on the line real quick. We're going to close it out. Demon Hunter.
Ghost Man.
We're going to close it out again. Special thanks to tonight's guest, Fritz Zimmerman, guys. Check out his book, Nephilim, Fallen Angels of the Ohio Valley. Check all of his stuff out immediately because it's right here under our feet, the answers to some age-old questions. Are we alone in the universe? Were these aliens? Were they giants? We don't know. We'll find out, though. Demon Hunter? Do you got anything to add?
Before we say goodbye, are we going to thank our
our music and things like that, Sean. I don't want to jump on your lines there.
No, I was just making sure you didn't have anything to add.
No, I am. You know what? I'm still in a little bit of shock.
It was a great show. Fritz is awesome. Fritz, thanks for coming on, guys. Be sure to check out our sponsors, Creations by Souls Denounced, guys, soulsdenounced.com. Serial Weird for everything weird. Midnight Syndicate for the tunes. Thanks, guys. Hey, from the haunted back roads of America, this has been another G&D exclusive interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't, Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
We love you guys. Have a great week.